Though coming from a long line of veterans, actor Gary Sinise admits serving one's country wasn't a priority growing up a self-proclaimed wild kid in Chicago. He instead discovered his passion for the stage, creating the celebrated Steppenwolf Theater alongside future stars John Malkovich and Laurie Metcalf. But Sinise's life was forever changed in the early 90s while portraying Lieutenant Dan in the Oscar-winning film Forrest Gump. It was then he discovered his life's mission to honor our country's heroes, dedicating the last 25 years to helping service members and their families with the Gary Sinise Foundation. Sinise's film roles include Apollo 13, Ransom, and Of Mice and Men. On television, he starred in Criminal Minds, Beyond Borders, and for 9 seasons on CSI NY. He tells his story in the new book, Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service. It is a great delight to welcome Gary Sinise to the roundtable this morning. Gary, thank you very much for being with us. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
It's very nice to have you on the program. Give us a sense of how you felt and why you felt now was the time to write a memoir.
I had considered some type of book over the years, having traveled so many miles, various countries and war zones, and visiting our troops on military bases all over the world, and the service work that I've been involved with, going to hospitals, and the incredible people I've met and who have inspired me over the years. And I've got several thousand pictures from all these various places that I've been and people I've met, and we considered at one point possibly trying to put some kind of a picture book together or something like that. And then I started to think about documenting some of this work, and then, I wasn't getting to it. And it was really my agents putting the bug in my ear and then pestering me, not pestering me, but just, keeping that idea in my head over a period of time that got me started on it. And then we were able to kind of outline what I wanted to do. And we made a nice arrangement with Thomas Nelson Publishing, and I went to work on it about 14 months ago, and here we are. We're launching the book.
One of the things that seems obvious in this book, and I guess many actors can say this, but you seem to be just the shining example of how one role changes your entire life.
I would say it was a part of the puzzle. Certainly an important part, and I actually start the book with a moment shortly after Forrest Gump opened, and I've played Lieutenant Dan, and I was approached by the Disabled American Veterans Organization, the DAV, and they have been, this tremendous advocacy group for wounded veterans for 95 years or something. They contacted me and invited me to come to their national convention about a month after Forrest Gump opened. They wanted to present me with their Commander's Award for playing this wounded veteran in the film and in what they consider to be a positive way. And I didn't know what the DAV was or anything about it, really. And I went to the national convention. I walked down on stage, and 3,000 veterans stood up, or if they couldn't stand up, they were in their wheelchairs and, applauding me and kind of welcoming me for playing a Vietnam veteran in a way that they felt was positive. Because if you look at that story, it is very positive. I mean, he goes off to war, and he's certainly very angry, and he's a Vietnam vet, so he comes back, and he kind of falls into the shadows and into the cracks, but he finds healing at the end, and he's positive, and he's moving on with his life, and he's successful in business. And we really hadn't seen that kind of a story about a Vietnam veteran before. And so they felt that was something that they wanted to recognize. So I went to that national convention, and it was a powerful moment, and it began a relationship with the DAV that I've had now for 25 years. It certainly was one aspect of what developed into a full-time service life. So I thought I would track sort of the history of getting into this and how it evolved into such a full-time commitment through the Gary Sinise Foundation that I started. And it turned into a nice autobiography that you know, there's a lot of cracks and bumps and mistakes made along the way, and there's some funny things that happened, and there were some key moments and key people in my life that have affected me. And it really is this journey from self to service, a singular focus on my acting career and my kind of what I was doing, you know, when I was a kid and into my early 20s and 30s and everything, to this post-September 11th devotion to try to ensure that our defenders know they're appreciated. And so I think it's a good, emotional, fun, hopefully inspiring read, because ultimately I'd like people to know how service to others has affected me and given my life a meaning beyond anything I could have imagined, you know, a couple of decades ago.
Gary Sinise is our guest. The name of the new book is Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service. As you said, this is just one part of the puzzle. The want, the desire to be an actor. Talk a little bit about that, of why that was so important for you and those early days in Chicago and ultimately being a co-founder of the Steppenwolf Theater Company, of what it was that you wanted to accomplish with that life in acting.
Falling into acting sort of by mistake changed the course of my high school days. Turned what was looking like it was going to be a really bumpy road as a high school student into something very positive. I was a struggling student from the time I was in kindergarten to, you know, all the way through my high school years. In my early years, you know, in second, third, fourth grade, you know, you're learning all those fundamentals, reading and writing, arithmetic and all these things, and for some reason, I just did not learn very well those fundamentals. And so I was challenged and struggling all the way through school. And I just wouldn't do homework, and I was failing my classes, and I wasn't showing up for classes, and I was just really, it was a bumpy ride there. And the only thing that was giving me any satisfaction was I played in a rock band, and I played music, and I really enjoyed performing on stage in the band and everything. And I just happened to be standing in this hallway as a sophomore in high school, and I was standing there with the other band members, and we were just kind of hanging out in the hallway. And we looked pretty scrubby, and this teacher walked down the hall, and she turned to us, and she told us, she said, "You guys look like gang members, and I'm directing West Side Story, and it's about these two gangs, so come and audition." And then she blew off down the hall, and just happened that the year before, when I was a freshman, I went to another high school in my freshman year, and they had done a production of West Side Story, and I went to see it because my girlfriend's brother was in the show or something. I loved it. I loved watching those guys dance and rumble and fight and on stage. So it kind of stuck with me, although I didn't think, you know, I was gonna audition for it or anything. But after school that day, I decided to go, like, see what was going on. And I was standing outside of where the audition was. All these pretty girls are walking into the audition, and I saw a few people I knew, and they went in. And I thought, well, I'll just go in there and see what's going on. So I went in, and they said, "Here, take this script, you know, and read this part." And I didn't know what they were doing. They start doing the scene, and I'm trying to follow along. And again, I can't read very well or anything. So I'm missing. All of a sudden, there's a big pause. Clearly, that was the moment that I was supposed to say my line. And I was just, I just stumbled around and didn't know what I was doing. And I was funny and got some laughs, because I was making a mistake and didn't know how to read or anything. Everybody was laughing, and I just rolled with it and kind of goofed off, and she put me in the play. Gave me a little part in the play as one of the sharks, and it changed my life. I mean, all of a sudden I fell in love with performing and being on stage and rehearsing the play, and I made friends, and I loved this teacher who just really took a liking to me and saw that I had some sort of intuitive instinct about just being free and sort of just doing my thing up there, because I didn't study acting. I didn't, you know, I wasn't one of the theater kids or anything. But after that, I wanted to take every theater class there was, and I wanted to try out for every play. And it began what became my, you know, life's passion and the thing that I ended up making a living at. And it all started when I was standing in this hallway. So I take the time to talk about the kid who was having trouble and was having a rough time, and how a moment just happened to change the course of that. And it set the stage for, you know, what I would do after high school, which as soon as I got out of high school, I wanted to continue that feeling that we had in high school of performing. And we started doing plays in this. We found a church space. And as soon as I got out of high school, I started this theater company that evolved into Steppenwolf Theater. And now the company is 45 years old. We own three or four buildings. And it really went from teenagers wanting to put on plays to a internationally renowned theater company that has a lot of just incredible artists there, and a lot of amazing people have come out of Steppenwolf.
Absolutely. I mean, the list of people, John Malkovich, Joan Allen, John Mahoney, Laurie Metcalf, Tom Irwin, Gary Cole, many, many more. You left high school, you finally graduated in high school in January of 1974. The first play of Steppenwolf opened in March of 1974. So you really, you started right in. And at what point, I mean, I guess there was never really, you get the sense in the book, there was never a point where you even questioned that decision. This is what you were going to do.
I wasn't going to go to college. I was supposed to graduate in 1973. That was my senior year. That was my class. But I had screwed up so badly in the early days of high school that by the time I was supposed to graduate, I didn't have enough credits. I hadn't earned enough credits to graduate. So they said, you got to come back. In order to get your diploma, you're going to have to take another semester. So I felt like I felt pretty bad. I talk about it in the book that, you know, I was a guy who really worked his way into the theater department, and I was actually one of the top guys in the theater department. And, you know, I got to play some pretty big parts in my junior and senior year. And so I did well, but I didn't have enough credits to graduate. So I had to go back for this other semester. So they, you know, I was supposed to graduate in 73. And in the book, we say I graduated in 73 and a half, you know, 1973 and a half.
Close enough.
That was my class. But, you know, that extra semester, and I describe this in the book, too, because when I went back to school, I just felt bad because all my classmates in my senior year, they were all off to college, and I'm going back to high school. So I'm feeling like a failure, really. And it was a time where I just didn't feel good. But the teacher, the drama teacher, picked a play. She never really told me this, but I think she picked it because she knew I was coming back to high school, and she wanted something that if I did well in my audition, that I could play this part. And it was this beautiful play, Cyrano de Bergerac. And I describe it in the book. You know, first coming in to audition for that, I started to read it, and I just felt like bad because I was the oldest kid there, and I was supposed to have graduated. So I walked out of the audition, and she called me up that night, and she said, you really stunk. And you did a bad job, but you can play this part, and you better get your act together because you got to go to high school anyway. You know, you're going to have to finish this semester. You better come and audition for this play and do a good job. And she really kicked my butt, so the next day I went back and tried it again and nailed it, ended up getting the part. And it made going back that extra semester worth it. The first Steppenwolf play, as you said, was March of 1974, and it was done in a little church that had a space in there. And my parents knew the architects of the church, and I asked them if they would talk to the church about letting us use the space in there for a play, and they did. And so all of a sudden, here's these kids putting on a show in a church, and we called it Steppenwolf. And that was the very beginning of a theater that's now internationally recognized. And, you know, we're just about to break ground on another building. So it's pretty cool, the people that come out of that. But when you think it was started by teenagers, little kids, didn't have anything but passion and a desire and an energy and a commitment. It's a great American dream story.
Gary Sinise is the author of Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service. I was reading the book over the weekend. Of course, we just lost Albert Finney, the great actor, and you write in the book that you directed him. You directed him in a production of Orphans.
Oh, gosh, Albert. I loved him so, yeah, and was sad. The day he died, I was on with one of the other actors who I directed with Albert. He had seen this production of one of the Steppenwolf shows that I did with John Mahoney, Terry Kinney, and Kevin Anderson, three members of Steppenwolf. And it was actually one of the plays we moved to New York, and it was the first time that John Mahoney had done anything in New York, and all of a sudden he went off and started doing movies because he was so good in the show. I mean, it launched his movie career. But Albert saw it, and he thought he wanted to play that John Mahoney part over in London. So he approached me about coming to London to direct him in the play. And, you know, I'm not going to say no to that. Albert Finney wants me to direct him. You know, this is the great Albert Finney. Albert was just like all of us Steppenwolf guys. That's what was so cool about Albert, is he saw this young company, and he recognized himself in the actors in the company, because he was just a wild nut when he was younger and, you know, wanting to act. And he was doing all the stuff with the Shakespeare company and all of that. And he saw this new company and doing this play, and he wanted to be a part of that. And I remember rehearsing with Albert. It wasn't like, you know, it was us and Albert. Albert was just one of the gang. And it was so fun. I stayed with him at his house while we were rehearsing in London. He just said, you stay with me, and, you know, I got a room upstairs. And so I spent, you know, 4 weeks living at Albert's house directing him in the show. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then he just loved performing. And so every night, you know, Albert would take everybody out to dinner, and he would have all his friends, you know, Sean Connery's there one night, and then Anthony Hopkins came over, and all the Vanessa Redgrave showed up, and I mean, you
Good
name
list.
It.
Yeah.
Everybody was coming to see the show. And, you know, I wasn't there the whole time because I directed the play, so I didn't have to stay. But the guys, Kevin Anderson and Jeff Fahey, who were in the show with Albert, they just, I mean, they were having the time of their lives. They were one of the biggest shows in London at that time with Albert Finney, and he's whining and dining them all night, you know, after the show, and they're going out with everybody. You know, it was just, Maggie Smith's here tonight, and it was just an incredible, incredible experience for everybody. All these wonderful British actors coming to see their pal Albert in the show. And he was just a wonderful guy. And I'm going to get all choked up talking about it. But when he passed away, I was on with my buddy Jeff Fahey, who was in the show with them. And I dug up some pictures out of this photo album from those days when we were rehearsing the show, and I sent them to my buddy Jeff, and, you know, we just had a good toast to Albert there. He was just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Gary Sinise is our guest. The subtitle of the book is A Journey from Self to Service, and in the limited time we have left, I would like to talk about that service. And you mention in the book, after 9/11, that your life's focus radically changed, as it did for so many people. You make the point that it didn't happen all at once, but the mindset, you say, definitely shifted. You still cared about the acting career, but you also wanted to look for ways to support the troops. Much of that was done through the USO, obviously your foundation. Talk a little bit about that, of really the juggling act, if you will, of still being an actor, having a series, going through all of that, and yet also making room for this very important part of your life.
You know, I mean, that was a terrible, terrible day. And there's a chapter in my book called Turning Point. It's the chapter that kind of talks about the impact of what happened on that day and how it made me reflect on a lot of things. I mean, look at my own life and, you know, what's important and what can I do to help? And I was brokenhearted for my country and the families who had lost loved ones on that day. And then we're starting to deploy to Afghanistan and Iraq, and our folks start getting hurt and they start getting killed. And it was very difficult for me to sit back and just go about life at that point. The last play I did as an actor was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And we revived it in Chicago, and we took it to London, and then we opened it on Broadway in April of 2001. And we were supposed to run until September 16th, 2001, and we closed a little early, July 29th. So had we continued to run our full 6 months, I would have been in New York at that time. And when that happened, I got a call from my buddy Terry Kinney, who lived in New York, and he called about 6:30 in the morning or very early, and told me to turn on the TV, and I watched all that on television, and it. I mean, it was horrible, and we all remember that. Life changed. There's no question it changed for me. And I remember the Friday after the Tuesday. It was a Tuesday that the airplanes crashed into the buildings and we were attacked. And President Bush called for a national day of prayer for the country. And on Friday, we went to our little church, and I mean the churches and the synagogues. I mean every place was packed on that Friday. I mean I remember, I describe this in the book. You know, that we got there and there wasn't any room to sit anywhere. I mean everybody was just packed into the church. So we stood against the wall. The priest came out and he said, "This has been a bad week." And I remember his first words. And then I can't remember everything he said in the homily, but something happened, at that time or shortly after, where I knew that I had to participate in doing something to help. I wasn't sure exactly what that was going to be, but after our troops, shortly after that, went into Iraq, I got on with the USO and got them to put me on a tour so I could go and thank the troops. And that began a series of, within 6 months of that time, I was gone all the time. I went to Iraq and I went to Italy and I went to Germany and I went to down to the naval base at San Diego. I went to Fort Stewart in Georgia. I went to Walter Reed in Bethesda. And then in November, I mean, this is all within a six-month period. And then in November, I went back to Iraq again. You know, I didn't have a job at that point. So I had some time, and I wanted to spend it supporting the men and women who were defending our country, and it galvanized this mission for me. And then I wanted to do more. And within a few months after that, I was taking a band overseas to perform for the troops. That first 6 months was just me going out and shaking hands and taking pictures and signing autographs and visiting with the troops and patting them on the back and telling them they were appreciated. And I have kept that message very strong and very direct and very clear from the time I started until today. I mean, I perform on these military bases all the time. We've done hundreds of concerts, and I've visited hundreds of times to various bases and hospitals around the world. And I always carry this message of support and appreciation, so that they know that that whether they're on the front pages or not, or you know, we're always talking about what they're doing. As long as they're serving, they know that somebody's out there that recognizes that, and that we're grateful for it, and we don't forget it. And we want them to know they're appreciated. And that began a mission that has just grown and grown and grown. And beyond the USO traveling and all that kind of thing that I was doing, I started raising my hand for multiple military charities around the country, just to go and raise money for them, show up at events, do PSAs, play concerts to raise money for them, whatever it was. And do you have the book right there?
I do. Have a whole list. Yes.
There's a list in the back. It's called Call to Action. And that list actually is up at my foundation. And I wanted it to be in there because I wanted people to see all these wonderful nonprofit organizations that I was supporting before I had my own foundation. And I would just raise my hand for one, and then I'd meet somebody from another one and then say, what can I do for you? What are you doing for the troops? And I felt like if I could support a lot of different efforts, then more people would be helped. You know, more of our defenders and their families would get assistance if these organizations were more successful. And if I could support a lot of different things, then a lot more people would get services provided to them. So I tried to raise money for many of those and promote them and promote their work and help them in various ways. And after doing that, for multiple years, I just figured, hey, this is something that I'm in for good, you know. So I'm gonna capitalize on all that experience that I learned from all these organizations and from the reputation that I built up as somebody who's reliably supporting on a consistent basis. I'm gonna make the most of that and start my own military nonprofit. So that's where the Gary Sinise Foundation came in. So you have in Grateful American this journey to that, you know, and you meet a lot of incredible people along the way. And you have some entertainment, you know, there's
great stories,
stories along the way of the things that, you know, some stumbles and missteps and funny stuff that's happened, but also inspirational, motivational things that have happened to me that have set me on this course. And it really is a journey from kind of this singular focused on self and the career and just what I was doing to kind of work on my own thing, to this broader mission of service that I felt called to at a certain point. And that has given incredible meaning and purpose to my life, beyond trying to be the best dad I can and the best husband and family person and take care of all those priorities. Obviously, the service mission has given life this purpose and meaning that I could have never suspected. And, you know, I recommend it to anybody. If you're feeling bad and, you know, you're going through trouble and everything, if you reach out and touch somebody else who's going through trouble themselves and you can help them out of it, you know, you forget about your own stuff.
Absolutely. Well, the name of the book is Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service. And you can find out more information about Gary's work at GarySiniseFoundation.org, GarySiniseFoundation.org, where there's also lots of information about the organizations and efforts that are supported by the foundation. It's GarySiniseFoundation.org. The name of the book is Grateful American. Gary Sinise, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck with your efforts, and I appreciate you being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
You bet.
Again, the name of the book is Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service. The book is published by Thomas Nelson. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.